Welcome to today's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show podcast.
And thank you, Johnny Donovan. Wonderful to be here with you. 800-282-2882 is our phone number to be a part of the conversation. And the conversation right now is focusing on one very specific thing, the declaration of victory. That's right. Kamala Harris, Vice President of these United States of America, declaring her visit to Central America a success. This while President Biden makes his way to Europe, and we remember full well all the flack that President George Bush got for declaring mission accomplished during the Iraq War. But you're not misunderstanding this. You're not hearing it incorrectly. Kamala Harris made that statement of do not come, has fallen on deaf ears. And we have seen from a report over in Axios that illegal border crossings are the highest in a decade. The highest in a decade. And we're talking about months and months and months still to go. It's really an amazing thing to look at the way the Democrats comport themselves when it comes to policy. When policy comes up short, they declare victory. When policy succeeds, well, let's be honest, it's so rare that their policies ever succeed. Well, they'll just claim victory, too. The number of migrants illegally crossing the U.S.-Mexico border this fiscal year is already the most since 2006. There are 4 months left to go in the fiscal year. We've broken those records. You know why this matters? Because the numbers quantify a lingering problem. Nearly 900,000 migrants were stopped by the Border Patrol from October the 1st of 20 to May the 31st. There were also more than 170,000 apprehensions last month, in line with 20-year records set in both March and April. The jury is in. One thing is abundantly clear. What is happening here in this situation with the U.S. border is failure. Systemic, ultimate, total, and complete failure. And it is a totally man-made disaster. Remember when the Democrats used to refer to acts of terrorism as the man-made disaster? It's really a remarkable thing to think about all the way around, because what they have done, and that's you expect your government to behave in a way that will secure your country. That's what you expect to see from government. You expect to see government operating in the appropriate fashion. You expect to see government functioning in a way that at a minimum will secure your borders, your sovereignty, all of that. And you have a person come into the presidency in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and their first order of business is to rescind the Trump executive order that did nothing more than direct the federal government to, well, you know what it was, enforce the law, to enforce the law. Kamala Harris, cut number one on the priority. Go.
If it is a priority to us to be concerned about what is happening at our border, then it must be a priority for us to understand why people leave.
If it's a priority for us to be concerned about what's happening at our border, then it must be a priority for us to understand why people leave. You didn't need to leave the United States, Vice President Harris, because the root cause of why it is that people are leaving their countries to come to the United States is you opened the border. You didn't have to do a fact-finding tour. You didn't have to go to the root cause. The root cause was Biden-Harris. Like, you can go down there and say MS-13, Hurricanes Iota and Eta. You can do any number of those things. But at the end of the day, the root cause of why people are coming northbound is Biden-Harris. They had the shirts at the border. You saw the migrants wearing them. Now, Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States, the source, the sum, and the summit of this failed policy, sitting there, says this. This is incredible. Kamala Harris, on the successful meetings she had both in Guatemala and Mexico.
The agreements that we have reached, again, are the result of all of the work leading up to this week, and they are very tangible and very specific. Do I declare this trip a success? Yes, I do.
Of course you do. Who expected her to come out and say, you know, we really blew it on this thing? We really, 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 really came up short. We blew it. This thing is terrible. We don't know what we're doing. We are in real trouble. We are facing a mess. Democrats never do that. Democrats will scapegoat. Democrats will find blame. They'll transfer blame. They'll transit blame. But they'll never take the responsibility. Jen Psaki yesterday was asked, spokeswoman Psaki, are you going to actually have a vision of which we will see Kamala Harris making her way to the border? Will she go to the border? Here's the answer.
At some point, she may go to the border. I don't have any trips to preview for you or predict or a timeline for that. But what I would reiterate is that her assignment was to work with countries and leaders in the Northern Triangle to address root causes, address corruption, ensure we're working together to address humanitarian concerns. I will say we're not taking advice from former President Trump or most of the Republicans who are criticizing us on this, given they were all sitting there while we created this problem we walked into, both at the border and with the movement of migration that has been growing over the last year. So we're not taking our guidance and advice from them. But if it is constructive and it moves the ball forward for her to visit the border, she certainly may do that.
We're not taking advice from any Republicans, Donald Trump, not anybody. But if she does decide to go to the border, she'll go to the border. Wow, that was some deep, insightful information, wasn't it? Well, somebody who understands exactly the absurdity of the situation on the border is Representative Lauren Boebert, Republican from Colorado. She released a video just yesterday highlighting that Vice President Kamala Harris hasn't visited the U.S. southern border since being tapped more than 2 months ago to oversee the border crisis. Now, the video is posted up over at Breitbart and a number of other places. In the video, which she put together last week while with a delegation in McAllen, Texas, she walks along the border carrying a cardboard cutout of Kamala Harris. The cardboard cutout Kamala. She's essentially illustrating absurdity while also addressing the seriousness here. Here's a little clip from that Boebert video.
Here's what's up at the border. Illegal aliens crossing the border. That's up. Sex offenders crossing the border. That's up. Drug trafficking, gun smuggling, human smuggling. That's up. Unaccompanied children being sent on this journey alone, and even worse, given over to the cartel. That is way, way up. So I brought Kamala down to see exactly what this regime is responsible for with their man-made crisis. Now, Kamala, I want you to stand here and look at what you've done.
They've basically taken Kamala. Any parent that's got kids of a young age will know they have turned Kamala Harris into Flat Stanley. That's right. You could take Kamala Harris. You could take the flat Kamala, mail it around to your friends. They'll take pictures with it at various locations, masked or unmasked. That's totally up to you. But that's essentially what we've done here. We have created cutout Kamala. Or cut out Vice President Kamala, cut out cardboard Kamala, and we've turned her into Flat Stanley, because it's really the only way that you're going to see her show up at the border. You know, it's amazing to see how this border is almost repellent to these Democrats. I haven't seen any other than people like Representative Henry Cuellar from down by the southern border doing anything in terms of taking action about what's going on down in that frontier. But you don't see any of the Democrats. AOC, Ilhan Omar, no, they don't want to come down. Rashida Tlaib hasn't shed a single tear yet for all the children and the unaccompanied minors being thrown over fences. Remember when she was confronting Tom Homan and the rest of the Border Patrol once upon a time? They won't acknowledge the crisis that's been created by government. And remember, it's almost too predictable to look at the sorts of crises that governments can bring about, and especially this government headed by Biden and Harris. So Joe Biden is going to be winging his way over to Europe. He's meeting with Bojo, Boris Johnson. He's going to meet with Putin. He's going to meet with the NATO members. He'll see the Queen. He'll visit with her. And he can rest assured that the mission has been successfully accomplished if you come anywhere near the border. By accomplished, it means they're going to continue to flow in. Because the metric is always inverted when it comes to government. More government is the success. More money spent is the success. My gosh, do I have to give a perfect analog to this? Do we remember how the Obama administration would brag about the increases year over year, month over month, of people signing up for food stamps. I remember it distinctly. You never saw reporting on, well, we got 15,000 people off of food stamps. You'd see, well, we signed another 22,000 people up for food stamps. We're in a much better position right now. Well, you're really not in a much better position right now, because what we've got happening is the ever-growing, expanding nature of the federal government spending more money, making you less safe, but they walk around with the imprimatur of self-declared success by a vice president who was a full partner in the effort to make the border less secure and to bring more migrants into the country. There won't be a hearing into this. There won't be an investigation into this. There won't be a task force into this. There will simply be a call at some point down the road when we move our attention and the national consciousness away from the border and over to some other crisis. We'll see a new piece of legislation introduced that says, and now we must do the amnesty. Si se puede. 800-282-2882. Up next, infrastructure. I'm Brett Winterbull, your guide host today on the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. And welcome back to the Rush Limbaugh Show. I am Brett Winterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. Oh, the infrastructure talks have fallen apart. It was only a matter of time. You knew that this wasn't really going to end up being a very effective way to run a railroad. Oh, wait, no, railroads are part of the infrastructure. I'm sorry, roads and bridges are not so much a part of the infrastructure. So Shelley Moore Capito is the latest Republican to try to go over to the White House and talk some sense into the White House and try to say, listen, this infrastructure thing you all are pushing is really not infrastructure. It's really not working out. Well, Shelley Moore Capito went and had negotiations with the White House, went and sat down for a couple hours with Joe Biden last week. You know, you had the bipartisan infrastructure talks. Well, those have imploded. That's the reporting of Politico. They've imploded. They didn't implode. They were detonated by Joe Biden. Joe Biden walked away from it. New York Times, with the accurate headline, surprisingly enough, President Biden cut off infrastructure talks with top Senate Republicans, turning to a bipartisan group of centrist senators to try to salvage a deal. Who are these centrist senators? Who are these folks that are going to try to cut the deal? Shelley Moore Capito is pretty moderate, pretty middle of the road. I mean, she's a Republican, sure, I get it, but she's a Republican over there in West Virginia. And West Virginia does benefit from federal spending when it comes to infrastructure and a whole lot of other projects. But when Joe Biden sat down and met with Shelley Moore Capito, who's the counterpart to Joe Manchin, he didn't like what she was saying. So he bails out on her, walks away from her, and goes and tries to pursue a group of centrist senators to salvage a deal. He's now looking for a new coalition for the infrastructure bill as talks with the key Republican senators have fallen apart. Well, the way you do the math, he's only got 50. He's only got 50 and can only get 51 with successful Vice President Kamala Harris breaking the tie. So if the Republicans don't want to play ball, which is what Shelley Moore Capito was, if they don't want to play ball, then ball is not going to be played. Well, from Fox News, we've now got the squad member, Cori Bush, going after Joe Manchin. Fall in line or get out of our way. The progressive squad lashing out at Senator Joe Manchin after the West Virginia Democrat announced his opposition to the Congressional Democrats' highest priority piece, which is For the People Act, right? We know that he's coming out against that. But he has also, it's worth noting, he has also said that he's opposed to the infrastructure deal as currently constituted. He says it's not really the infrastructure thing that we need to be dealing with. So here's the quick and dirty on this situation. The Democrats are not going to give an inch on infrastructure. They're not going to give an inch. And they're also at the same time trying to have this fight over the For the People Act, that H.R. 1 that's going to nationalize and federalize elections across the spectrum. The Democrats are in a tough spot right now. Joe Biden really has nothing to show for all of this effort that he's been putting into trying to secure a W. He really is in a tough situation because You've got a guy who came out and promised all these big, bold things. The problem is when you do the math, I get it. Joe Biden's got 80 million plus supporters backing up his election, right? What do you say? 80 million. We have 80, 85 million people came out and voted for us. Sure you do. But you have five in the House. You have a five vote majority in the House. You have a tie in the Senate. And the only reason why the tie will go to the runner, meaning Joe Biden, is because you've got Kamala Harris who can cast that vote as the person who is as the person who's going to be able to push that over the line. But before you get there, you have got to get past the cloture votes. You've got to get past the 60 vote threshold to have a bunch of people get on board with these plans before you go for the conventional vote, which is why they're talking about blowing up the filibuster. If you get rid of the filibuster, then it's a straight 51-49 engagement if they blow that up. But Manchin opposes it, and so does Kyrsten Sinema. Well, here comes Shelley Moore Capito, who's definitely a voice of reason. She's a Republican from West Virginia. She's trying to talk infrastructure with the White House. She said Wednesday, today, that she's frustrated that the White House kept moving the goalposts. So it's like she's trying to talk about, well, can we do this? Can we do that? And Joe Biden's like, oh, no, that's no good. No, that's no good. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. So eventually it just falls apart. You know what? You call that sabotage. Biden essentially is sabotaging this conversation. Here is the Senator Capito from West Virginia talking about this.
I'm a bit disappointed and frustrated that the White House really kept moving the ball on me and then finally just brought me negotiations that were untenable and then ended the negotiations altogether.
So what do you do in this regard now? What do you do? Well, you really don't have many options. Look, the president has to make the case that the stuff that he's selling as infrastructure is infrastructure. There's a conventional understanding of what infrastructure is. Roads, bridges, highways, airports, what have you. It's not child care. It is not home health aids. That's not infrastructure. Those are employment plans. Those are wage issues. Those are not infrastructure. Infrastructure presumes by its very nature that there's a multi-generational use of whatever it is you're building. Okay, you've built a new interstate. We will have generations use that interstate. Airport, same thing. Ports, you got it. Railroads, okay. But when you get into paying for home health aides and a jobs program that's going to be based upon the Green New Deal, we're going to pay people to dismantle coal-fired plants and put them to work doing XYZ. It's make work. That's not an infrastructure plan. That's a make work project. And the American people they've seen $6 trillion thrown into this mess with COVID-19. They're seeing people paid not to go to work. The last thing the American people want is to expend tax dollars in the pursuit of home health care, child care, paid leave, packing the Supreme Court. None of that is recognized by anybody with a semblance of sense as the sort of things that you would try to sell as an infrastructure deal. Look, the Republicans even went a little bit of a longer way when it came to the idea of broadband. They went down that road on broadband. They said, okay, we'll consider some broadband. We'll do a little broadband. At least that'll have a long-term benefit. But you've just got kooks writing this bill. I hearken back to what we heard from Joe Manchin back in on Sunday when he was making the rounds, and he had written that op-ed piece in the newspaper in Charleston, West Virginia. And I'm hearkening back to what he said, in which he said, look, the country is divided. We don't want to divide it more. What that tells me is Manchin wants to do a unifying sort of a thing. He doesn't want to do H.R. 1, which is an 800-page bill that will govern whether or not your lawmakers can redistrict inside your state based on census results, whether or not your lawmakers can publicly fund candidates for office who otherwise are not gainfully employed, if you can have permanently run vote harvesting plans and scrapping of voter ID. That is nothing the American people are clamoring for. 99% of what's in this infrastructure plan is nothing the American people are clamoring for. Joe Biden keeps moving the goalposts. He'll find himself right outside that stadium before he knows it. It's madness. Let's get back to work, Washington. Let's get back to work. I'm Brett Winterble, your guide host today on the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. I don't want to put too fine of a point on this, on the infrastructure thing, but the reality is people do want to see government function properly. We just don't want to see government employees and bureaucrats taking our money and literally throwing it into a dumpster or into a kiln where it just burns and it doesn't do any good. The fact that we've had this crisis, and I know Rahm Emanuel, famous for the quote, you know, crisis is an opportunity and opportunity is a crisis, all that sort of stuff. Well, you've got a real crisis on the southern border. And I'm going to go back to this thing with Kamala Harris again, because I think there's important developments that are moving on this. So if a crisis is an opportunity, what is the opportunity for America with the border crisis? Serious question, right? Rahm Emanuel was famous for saying that as Barack Obama came in, and he came in as his chief of staff back in 2009, 2010. And Rahm Emanuel said, a crisis is an opportunity. It's a Chinese proverb. Sure it is. Crisis and opportunity are the same word in Mandarin. So if it's a crisis at the American border, what's the opportunity for America? How do Americans getting up and going to work in Charlotte and Tampa and in Vegas and Spokane, Chicago, Phoenix, how do they benefit from the crisis at the border? They don't. One political party does by pushing the amnesty line. It's not lost on me that we are 9 million workers short in this economy because we've paid people to stop working. That's what the BLM numbers said. 9.28 million jobs wide open now, nobody to fill them. If I were a cynic, if I were a suspicious type, I would look at this inflow of potential labor coming into the United States and say to myself, what's the grand plan with the amnesty that the Democrats want to cook up and you know is coming? Is it a way to placate employers and say, listen, we've got all these people ready to work. What do you say? Get on board with the grand amnesty plan. Well, on Vox, former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley on Tuesday ripped Kamala Harris for her handling of the border, as the vice president still has yet to set a date to travel there and has gone nearly 100 days without a press conference on the migrant surge. Here's what
Kamala Harris was given one job, and that was to deal with the border. And any leader knows you can't fix what you can't see. She hasn't been on the ground. She hasn't talked to Border Patrol. She doesn't know what is happening there. So she says she wants to go to the root cause. This is the same woman that literally tweeted out, come one, come all, we're open for everyone. And so now she's going to say, do not come. You know what says do not come? When you show up at the border and you really have actions speak louder than words, what I will call it is flat out denial. They think that if they don't go, it won't be real. It's very real.
It is incredibly, extraordinarily real, especially for those border agents. And especially for the communities that have now been burdened around the country by midnight dumps and by people who are taken in vans and buses and brought into the center of town. And it's just one of these deals where you say, well, they'll just have to figure out what to do with these folks. We can't keep them down at the border. After Joe Biden named Kamala Harris as his running mate, the Democrat machine went into overdrive to remake her image into a moderate centrist rather than the radical leftist that she actually is. It was a calculated move to go after the suburban white women vote, taking people of color for granted, as is usually the Democratic Party strategy. Well, here's Rush talking about Kamala's ambush makeover in August of last year.
They are attempting to reinvent Kamala Harris as a moderate centrist, a pragmatist, to go after the swing voter on the premise they think they're going to win the minority vote anyway, despite the tough Antifa, Black Lives Matter talk. They think the black vote's got nowhere else to go, especially with her on the ticket. So they don't even have to do the usual pandering to the African-American community. They are just taking all of you for granted that you are going to be there. And so they're going to position her as a pragmatist, a centrist, a moderate. They're going to target her at suburban soccer moms in swing states so that they can try to feel good about themselves And in the process of feeling good about themselves, they'll feel good enough to vote for Biden because Kamala Harris is on the ticket and she's one of them when she isn't. This is one of the most radical leftists in the Democrat Party. The Democrats are going to be reinventing Kamala Harris as a moderate, pragmatist, centrist to go after suburbanites. The leftist base always says it's going to sit out, meaning they're not going to make of themselves big targets, but they never do. Power for them is far more important than ideology. They assume Biden is not going to make it through the first term. They're going to take over. Kamala will revert to form once in power. This is what Democrats are being told. They're being told not to believe the reinvention of Kamala Harris. Don't believe that she's a moderate. Don't worry about it. She is the radical leftist that you want her to be. We just can't reveal that yet. But don't worry. This is what Democrat voters and donors are being reassured, because there are a lot of people in the Democrat side nervous at this attempt to remake her as some harmless, moderate pragmatist. We have a little montage here just to illustrate how the Democrats and the media are doing everything they can to try to portray Kamala Harris as somebody that she is not.
She became known as a pragmatic moderate.
What's great about Kamala Harris and Joe Biden is that they are pragmatic.
Senator Harris is viewed as much more of a moderate within the Democratic Party.
Cultivating a moderate political reputation and inviting criticism from some liberals that she was insufficiently progressive.
What an absolute joke
this is. From the middle of the road moderate wing of the Democratic Party.
My dear sister, Harris is not a radical. She is a centrist and a moderate.
Oh, come on, Corn. That's Cornel West. Cornel, what happened to your pride, man? What is this? My dear sister, Harris is not a radical. She's a centrist and moderate. You know what this tells me? These people are not willing to come out and be honest about who they are. They're lying through their teeth about who this woman is. Why? I'll tell you why. It's because this country is not Twitter. This country is not Facebook. It is not what the Democrats think. It's not what the media thinks. Let's go through some things here about Kamala Harris. In the United States Senate, she had the most liberal voting record last year. She had a more liberal voting record than even Bernie Sanders. She is in favor of things like late-term abortion. She thinks Catholics are not fit to serve on the Supreme Court. She has tried to criminalize climate change denial. She wants to criminalize the manufacture of guns. She wants to provide taxpayer-funded health care to illegal immigrants, free. She once compared ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, to the Ku Klux Klan. Nevertheless, she was endorsed by police unions when she was California's top prosecutor, when she was the attorney general. She is an Indian-American candidate to one audience, an African-American candidate to another. Her father owned slaves. Her family were slave owners. She was not. They're from Jamaica, depending on the day you talk to them. And this is just a partial list of things about her. Miranda Devine in the New York Post writes, she's the presidential candidate by proxy, yet is protected from the usual scrutiny that goes with the position. She won't have to debate Trump. She doesn't even have to be likable to voters. She is there because of identity politics. She's there because she's a woman and a woman of color, not because she's the best, not because she's got the most meritorious record. She's there strictly because she checks off identity politics boxes.
I know plenty of moderates who bailed out rioters and looters back during the summer of 20. Plenty. Some of the most moderate people I know were bailing people out of jail for rioting. Come on, man. 800-282-2882 is the phone number to be a part of this conversation. You grab your cell phone if it's handy. Cell phone company, more popular than ever. Pure Talk has a smart offer. Their monthly service is just $30 for unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data. Just 30. That's likely a big savings from your current bill. This is the company Rush recommended, and for good reason. They provide the same level of coverage as one of the big three carriers, but for less. And when you switch to Pure Talk, you can keep your same phone number while saving all that money. Rush has the details.
Hey, folks, there's one sure bet that you can make this year, and that is you're going to use your cell phone more than you did last year. That translates to bigger cell phone bills. You're going to be paying more for it, unless you are proactive and do something about that. This is why so many people in this audience are switching their cell phone service from one of the big providers to Pure Talk. Pure Talk offers you unlimited talk, unlimited text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. And if you go over on data, they don't charge you for it. They don't charge you if you go over your 6 gigs of data. Now, you compare that monthly price, $30 a month, to your current cell phone bill. Just compare it. Your current cell phone bill, I mean, I'd say make a guess, but $75, $80, depending on how many lines and phones you have. Don't know what it is, but $30 a month for unlimited talk, unlimited text, 6 gigs of data. Now, here's the real icing on the cake. Pure Talk uses the same cell phone towers as one of the biggest cell phone service providers in America. They focus on providing great service and support with every Pure Talk employee located in the U.S. From your cell phone, do this. Dial #250 and say Pure Talk. Get started. You'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250 and say Pure Talk. Just pick up your phone right now. #250 and say Pure Talk. Guess what? Somebody from there will answer and you're off and running.
And welcome back to the Rush Limbaugh Show. Brett Witterbull as your guide host today, 800-282-2882. And we're going to go out on the phones and start off right out of the box with Josh in Florida. Josh, welcome to the Rush Limbaugh Show.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to take a moment to say before I called and spoke to the phone interviewer, you know, what I was going to say. I want to say that Jesus Christ is Lord. Trump is still my president. And a couple months, God rest his soul, before he passed, I was blessed to be able to speak to the great Rush Limbaugh on, over the phone and get through to this him on the station here.
Outstanding.
After that, I kind of, as the left wants the right to give up, the conservatives, they want us to give up, and the election was completely stolen. But I keep coming back to this station, and thank you for what you do in keeping the Rush Limbaugh voice alive and the conservative American patriot voice alive. Had said that, what blew me away, and please, in your talent and miraculous ways of being the talented host here, you can say, but it blew me away when you hear things in life and it just blows you away.
Uh-huh.
The circle back, circle jerk girl, whatever she is, turns around and says that Kamala Harris's assignment was to investigate corruption in the Northern Triangle.
Yes.
Right? Okay. The most illegitimate, corrupt, next to Barack Obama's presidency, administration alive, is investigating corruption? I mean, I don't even know how to respond to that. It's the craziest thing I've heard. It's definitely on the top of the list in my life of things that I've heard where I was just in awe and almost speechless. Wait, she's investigating corruption? That's like sending a corrupt cop to investigate a drug deal where there's $10 million on that table and nobody else around.
I understand what you're saying, Josh. You've used terrific analogies, and I'm so happy you got to talk to Rush. And I'm happy you're continuing to listen to the program. But look, this was all fake. It was a setup. It was let me go and look like it's, you know, let's see what we can find. You know what it reminds me of in a lot of ways? It reminds me of the UN weapons inspectors, and they would go look in an empty warehouse and pretend like, oh, well, I guess Saddam Hussein didn't have any illicit weapons in this place. I guess it didn't. It was none of that stuff that was happening here. Or the Iranian inspectors. Well, you know, we went and looked, but there's no nuclear stuff in this location, even though, you know, full well, they've got centrifuges doing their thing. It's absolutely crazy. And so, no, you send Kamala Harris there to look like she's investigating. She's not really. There's no investigation going on. And besides, it's Kamala Harris and President Biden that are most to blame for the mess. They opened the border. They reversed the Trump executive order that was enforcing the immigration laws. I mean, that's what it was. Gary's in Arizona. He's right there in the border, general border neighborhood. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, this whole left, they're nothing but buffoons, and the media won't call them out for that. I mean, Harris on the news, I think it was yesterday, she's like, they asked her why she hasn't been down at the border, and she says, well, I haven't been to Europe either.
Right, that was her answer.
What does that happen? It's like they don't even make sense. I don't know if they believe themselves when they open their mouth and they say something, or they're just... It almost seems like the whole left, you had to be born that way. You can't be made that way.
Okay. Now listen, you raise an important point, right? Why doesn't the media call them out? Well, they're not going to call them out. We know that already, but here's the important point. Wouldn't you expect, if Kamala Harris is making that trip down to meet with the people who are investigating corruption in the Northern Triangle and all that sort of stuff, wouldn't you have thought she would have brought Alejandro Mayorkas, the head of DHS, or somebody from the Justice Department, or somebody from the State Department that was a high-profile person to investigate this stuff? The reality is the president of Guatemala and the president of Mexico are furious at her and her boss because they know that the two of them created the mess. They set the fire, they watched the fire, and then they tried to show up telling you how to put out the fire. Let's find out the root cause of the arson. You burn the building down. That was the root cause of the arson. Well, let's investigate that and see how we can make sure that does not happen again. Just stop burning buildings down. It's absurd. I'm Brett Witterbull. It is the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. You know, fresh off of commemorating the important 77th anniversary of D-Day and, of course, the anniversary of the battle at Midway, and just a few weeks ago we commemorated Memorial Day, you're seeing flags flying all across the country. It's an incredible thing. It always makes me feel very, very good. Rush spoke about the importance of, well, the American flag.
You can't give up, folks. We can never give up our uniquely American symbols. We cannot give up our fundamental patriotic institutions. We cannot give up or allow the dilution of the foundational building blocks of the greatest country on earth.
And coming up in that next hour, we're going to be talking about that very sentiment and what that flag represents. Because for too many of the last number of years, we have seen people increasingly declare that they're offended or they're hurt or they're worried or they're concerned because they see an American flag. An American flag, the representation of the American Republic, of who we are as a people. And you're offended by that? I just don't get the wiring there. Plenty more straight ahead. It's Brett Witterbull in on the Rush Limbaugh Show. And welcome back to the Rush Limbaugh Show. It is a pleasure to be here with you. Our telephone number to be a part of our conversation is 800-282-2882. And certainly check out rushlimbaugh.com. One of the things that I just cannot wrap my mind around is the notion of being triggered by the American flag. The idea that the stars and stripes and all that that represents would be offensive to you is just something I can't get my brain around. But the elite members of the woke class, they can find offense in almost anything that ties back to traditional American values, and the American flag stands at the top of that list. Member of the New York Times editorial board said on MSNBC's Morning Joe yesterday that she was horrified upon seeing dozens of American flags on people's cars and insisted that we have to separate America from whiteness. Now think about that. A member of the New York Times editorial board saying that is Mara Gay, who is also an MSNBC analyst. She came out and talked about how this had so negatively affected her. Here's what she said on the show.
We have tens of millions of Trump voters who continue to believe that their rights as citizens are under threat by simple virtue of having to share the democracy with others. I think as long as they see Americanness as the same as one with whiteness, this is going to continue. We have to figure out how to get every American a place at the table in this democracy, but how to separate Americanness, America, from whiteness. Until we can confront that, and talk about that, this is really going to continue. I was on Long Island this weekend visiting a really dear friend, and I was really disturbed. I saw, you know, dozens and dozens of pickup trucks with explicatives against Joe Biden on the back of them, Trump flags, and some cases just dozens of American flags, which, you know, is also just disturbing because essentially the message was clear. It was, this is my country. This is not your country. I own this.
How do you get that from the American flag? In all seriousness, you put American flags up, so that means that the country is, the flag is whiteness? You know, it's incredible how prescient a person Rush was. It's remarkable that he had these people down to the atomic level. He understood how they functioned, what would trigger them, what would upset them. When was the last time we saw a vehicle driving along with a Biden-Harris bumper sticker and an American flag flying from it? I don't know. Maybe you've seen that. I don't know. But, you know, Rush talked about the impact of the American flag. He said this.
This is U.S. News and World Report. U.S. flag only boosts GOP. The U.S. flag makes people think and vote Republican, just like 4th of July celebration. No wonder Democrats and other leftists are always so eager to burn the American flag, because it tends to motivate people to vote and think Republican. Just a brief exposure to an image of the American flag shifts voters, even Democrats, to Republican beliefs, attitudes, and voting behavior, even though most don't believe it'll impact their politics, according to a new 2-year study just published in the scholarly Psychological Science magazine. What's more, according to the three authors from the University of Chicago, Cornell University, and Hebrew University, the impact had staying power. A single exposure to an American flag resulted in a significant increase in participants' Republican voting intentions, voting behavior, political beliefs, and implicit and explicit attitudes, with some effects lasting as long as 8 months. Folks, go out and put a flag up front in the house. Everybody get a flag out there, because it's a double whammy. A, it'll tick off the Democrats that your house might be at risk, but it'll grow conservatism. Look at this study, 2-year study, 3 universities, 3 scholars. I read this to you again. A single exposure to an American flag resulted in a significant increase in participants' Republican voting intentions, voting behavior, political beliefs, and implicit and explicit attitudes, some effects lasting 8 months. These results constitute the first evidence that non-conscious priming effects from exposure to a national flag can bias the citizenry toward one political party and can have considerable durability. All this explains so much. It's why the left out there burning flags all day long, why they don't like the 4th of July. This is classic. Now, this is the first study to look at the political impact on Americans who have seen an American flag, and it seems to back up another recent Harvard University professor study that found that kids who attended a July 4th parade ended up leaning Republican when they grew up. This is not that Harvard study. This turns out, it was not even related to it. Turns out to be a companion study. It's a separate study. You can see where this is headed, though, can't you? Soon, folks, it's going to be against the law to have flags near polling stations. What do you bet it won't be long before the left and the Democrats suggest, after looking at this, that you can't use the American flag in a campaign ad? Don't be surprised. I know these people. I know these people like every square inch of my glorious naked body. And this is the kind of thing, you're never going to see them react publicly to this. But behind the scenes, they're looking at this, and they'll believe it, and they'll act accordingly. Now, you have to wonder how long it'll be before flying the flag is outlawed, along with celebrating the 4th of July. But here, the question here is, why should the symbol of America, our flag of patriotism, be so much more associated with the Republican Party than the Democrat Party? That's a rhetorical question, of course, but still one worth asking. Why does this happen? 4th of July, young kids, turns them into Republicans.
Seeing the American flag boosts people's support of and intention to vote for the Republicans. How does that happen? It can only happen not because of the Republicans so much, but because of the Democrats. It's obvious what the Democrats stand for. For this study, the scholars asked mostly Democrat-leaning voters to join in the survey conducted just before. This was before the immaculation of Obama. All were given a survey to fill out. Half of those surveys included a small picture of an American flag in the top left corner. 90% said that they believe their voting behavior would not be influenced by the presence of a flag, but after asking how they did vote, the study concluded this. In contrast to the beliefs of the participants in the pilot study, the results from the experiments reported here show that exposure to the American flag introduces a bias toward the Republican Party over the Democrat Party. In one experiment, we tested whether subtle exposure to the flag shifted people's beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors toward the Republican end of the political continuum, and we found that a single exposure to a small American flag during deliberation about voting intentions prior to a general election led to significant and robust changes in participants' voting intentions, voting behavior, political attitudes, all in the politically conservative direction. So you see, it goes even beyond voting Republican. It means voting conservative. It means we are a center-right country, and it means that we are a majority of the people and of the thinking in this country. It's a funny little story here. It's nevertheless important, worthwhile, very instructive, and just another reason why, go ahead and feel optimistic. We're not alone. We're not the minority. We are the country. We just need more and more elected representation of who we are.
Okay, now I have to jump back to what set all of this off. And in the interest of accuracy, and we know Rush was about precision and accuracy, and was about getting to the truth of things. Mara Gay said that she was offended when she saw American flags all over the pickup trucks driving out on Long Island. But she used a particular word, and I think we need to explore what she means by that. Now, I know what an expletive is. We can't say them. We're on the radio. You know what an expletive is. You've heard them, no doubt. Especially after President Trump was elected by people who didn't like him. But Mara Gay, she introduced a totally new term into this conversation. Go ahead, Mike, fire it.
I was really disturbed. I saw, you know, dozens and dozens of pickup trucks with explicatives against Joe Biden.
Okay, explicatives. Now, I'm going to believe that she meant to say expletives. But an explicative is something that would really be something that we would welcome. The definition of an explicative, serving to explicate, that is, to explain logically what is contained in the subject. An explicative proposition. In other words, you were to say, Joe Biden is a socialist. Well, you might be making the argument as an explicative. You might be deploying the word the explicative there by making the case against Joe Biden. The expletive is something different. The expletive is curse words. That doesn't advance anything. The only thing you get when you hear curse words is you know that there's an Antifa rally nearby. And that's what you get from the curse words, usually directed at the beloved American flag. But it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop there. In moments, I'm going to share with you what it is that the United States has now become in the mind of Ilhan Omar. It's quite shocking. I am Brett Winterbull, your guide host today on the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. And it is the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. I am your guide host, Brett Winterbull, and we are unpacking the expletives, the explicatives, the explanations behind the fear of the American flag. I thought that was an awesome, awesome commentary from Rush, talking about how it is people get triggered by the American flag. Now, we have been a nation of immigrants since the beginning, and we have welcomed in immigrants and refugees over the generations. Ilhan Omar is somebody who has come into the United States as a person fleeing a horribly violent reality in Somalia. She was a refugee who came into the United States and found an amazing future for her. Got educated, went to college, is a member of the Congress, earns $178,000 a year as a congressperson representing Minnesota. But Ilhan Omar is no fan of that flag, no fan of America. Ilhan Omar claims the United States commits, quote, crimes against humanity and engages in unthinkable atrocities like those carried out by Israel, Hamas, and the Taliban. She really did. She said that. She said we must have the same level of accountability and justice for all victims of crimes against humanity. We have seen unthinkable atrocities committed by the United States, Hamas, Israel, Afghanistan, and the Taliban. Now, that's kind of interesting that that she would say that about the United States, because as far as I'm concerned, this is new ground that's being broken by Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar isn't just going after the American flag, and Ilhan Omar is abandoning a certain analogy that the left has loved. Do you remember when George W. Bush was Hitler, and then Dick Cheney was Hitler? And do you remember when Trump was Hitler and Pence is Hitler? You know, Hitler was the go-to for a long time. We're seeing a little bit of growth here in the invective being thrown at the United States. It's inaccurate. It is inaccurate invective because we are not like Hamas. We are not like the Taliban. We do not commit unthinkable atrocities. We're a universal force for good on the world stage. And we don't bring about subjugation, beheadings, and things like that. We come in and we preserve life and protect communities. Ilhan Omar should know that. We gave her shelter in a storm. And you know who did it? Evil Ronald Reagan did that. But I think we're starting to see some progress here because they're not throwing the Hitler card anymore or the Nazi card. They're now trying to use more diverse sources for outrage. Hamas and the Taliban. It's still not accurate. But it's the sort of invective you'd expect. And I imagine that if we take enough time to expose Ilhan Omar to the stars and stripes, perhaps we'll eventually begin to turn the way she's thinking. We've got a lot of people that want to weigh in on a number of these topics, especially the flags triggering Maya Gay. Let's go out and talk to Mitch in Eagan, Minnesota, right down the road from Ilhan Omar, so to speak. Welcome to the show, Mitch.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me about that, by the way. Anyway, so if she was so triggered by a dozen flags with a couple pickup trucks, how did she feel about Joe Biden's inauguration? Wasn't there like a million flags there, but nobody showed up for it?
Yes, it was flags, but no people. That's exactly. Right. What do you make of these people who are triggered by the flag? I mean, what do you think when you hear them say, "I'm triggered by the American flag"? What sad lives they must live?
I don't understand it. To be perfectly honest, it makes zero sense. You know, I mean, it. Yeah, I don't know. You describe it to me. It makes zero sense to me. I can't figure it out.
I can't either. I appreciate you being out there, Mitch. All the best to you. Sorry about reminding you being down the road from Ilhan Omar. Maria is south of San Antonio, Texas. Beautiful country. Welcome to the program, ma'am. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, sir. And thank you for listening to me.
Yes, ma'am.
Sir, I am a Mexican-American housewife, and someone needs to let the president know that the manipulation of my people, the Hispanic people, sir, for the pure purpose, the sole purpose of gaining power and staying in power, is the purest form of racism. The purest form of racism. And when you see children dropped over the fence.
Yes.
Babies thrown into the water, children abandoned crying or crawling, and the president doesn't lift up a finger, sir. Sir, one can conclude that that is an injustice against the Hispanic community. Sir, someone needs to sit down and talk to him, because this is not right, sir. This is not right. And by the way,
yes, ma'am.
I am a Mexican-American housewife.
Yes, ma'am.
My first language is Spanish, but, sir, I have relatives who landed in Normandy.
Yes, ma'am.
I have relatives who fought with General Patton. I have relatives who were in Vietnam. And, sir, we fly the American flag.
God bless you. I am not white.
Believe me, I am not white. Thank you for listening to me. Please, please talk to him. This is not right.
God bless you, Maria, and your family, and all the generations who stood up for this country. And you made the single most eloquent appeal that could be made, because you understand what is going on. You have roots in this country and that community, and you understand what's going on. And I'm telling you, folks, when Kamala Harris laughs off going to the border, or dismisses it with a chuckle or a cackle and says, I haven't been to Europe either. Do you know what that's saying to those folks who think like Maria, who feel like Maria, that these children are being abused and are being used by the cartels and the human smugglers? Do you know what that sounds like to them? It says that child life is worthless, that it's worth less. And what that means is that America is not living up to the ideal. Joe Biden wants to tell us that we're a systemically racist country and give us lectures about that. His vice president refuses to go see the people at the Mexican border. What is that system called? When you refuse to speak to the people most negatively impacted by this. What is that called? When you avoid a group of Americans based on what? Their heritage? Their color? Their language? What is that called? As Joe Biden jets off to Europe for an excellent vacation, Kamala Harris comes back and declares victory. The question I would ask about Kamala Harris is, victory for whom? Over what? What was victorious? This trip served to only enrage our allies in Mexico City and Guatemala City and in the Northern Triangle. And it served to insult an important part of our community, that community south of San Antonio, Texas, where you have got people with roots that go back to the early days of this continent. It's disgraceful. It's heartbreaking. And I think what you heard from Maria was exactly spot on. That ought to be played for every Democrat politician in Washington, D.C., as far as the eye can see. Brett Winterbull, your guide host on the Rush Limbaugh Show. Well, I'm still thinking about Maria's call. I mean, an absolutely powerful message to the rest of the world, and especially to our political establishment. You know, since the United States started funding the World Health Organization again, the World Health Organization recently welcomed Syria and Belarus to its executive board. Wow, really? Syria and Belarus. Yep, from the Washington Examiner, Biden rejoining the World Health Organization looks worse every day. That Syria tyrannized by a dictator, Bashar Assad, who murdered his own citizens with chemical weapons, and that the Belarus leader, Alexander Lukashenko, has turned it into a prison state, where he recently committed an act of piracy by forcing down a civilian airliner to arrest a passenger who was a political nuisance. Well, both these pariah nations are sitting now on the board of the World Health Organization, an organization that proclaims itself, quote, trusted to serve public health at all times. Here's what Rush had to say about that particular organization.
I'm telling you that the guy that runs the World Health Organization is indeed a parrot. He's a puppet of the Chinese. He has his job because of the backing of the Chinese, and therefore he does his bidding for the Chinese. He has, like CNN just did, a sickening story about the superiority of the Chinese Navy. He has carried the water for China on every assertion about this virus. He's assured people way back it was not China's fault, that it's not contagious, that nobody need worry about it. And President Trump has been livid about this ever since the preference for China became obvious, threatened to defund, and made the announcement that he is.
I'm instructing my administration to halt funding of the World Health Organization while a review is conducted to assess the World Health Organization's role in severely mismanaging and covering up the spread of the coronavirus.
The fact that he defunded the WHO, threatened to, until they straighten up, unless they do, means you have not lost Donald Trump. He pulled out of the W, and it was justified and it was valid. We've been throwing money down a bottomless pit that is working against us, like the Paris Accords were to work against us, like the United Nations is essentially aligned against us with our enemies and the rest of the world. Trump and Trump alone, just like he redid NAFTA, just like he has changed the WTO, the World Trade Organization, he's now telling, and just like he threatened NATO, unless they shaped up, we're not gonna foot the bill for all of you people like we've been doing. And they shaped up. This is vintage Trump. This is the guy you elected. He's not going to throw American money away. But more than that, he's not going to allow us to be made a fool of. So just as he pulled us out of the Paris Accords and pulled us out of the Iran deal, he's now said we're going to defund the WHO. We're going to stop paying our share, which is the majority, unless they shape up and get rid of their current director. And, of course, the world is reacting in outrage.
Think about what President Trump did as Rush was talking about that. And think about what you're seeing from Joe Biden. Donald Trump was very comfortable defunding. He was very comfortable saying, okay, Iranian nuclear deal, boom, you're gone. World Health Organization, boom, you're gone. Paris Climate Accord, boom, you're gone. You pull out the money. Now flip the coin and look at the Biden side of the coin. The only thing he's got is this desire to throw money to everybody so he'll be liked. I mean, I get it. Donald Trump was hated, right? He was didn't like him. But if you got these guys together in NATO and the people, certain people at the United Nations, and you got them together and you plied them with a bunch of adult beverages, the reality is they were impressed with what Donald Trump was able to do. With all the jawboning that goes on in the world political arena, Donald Trump got results. The Abraham Accords, right? And you look at all that and you say to yourself, so what's Joe Biden's play? Well, I'm going to tell everybody in the world that we're back. America's back. Yeah, America's back as a sap, willing to hand out cash to anybody who'll like us. It's like the rich kid that drives the fast sports car and doesn't have many friends, so he invites you to ride along with him. And, you know, he's trying to build up his self-esteem by buying friendship rather than having people actually like you. It's incredible to watch the way they do this stuff. It's unbelievable is what it is. So Joe Biden comes out now and says, hey, I'm going to throw $100 billion over to the Iranians. Don't make nukes. I'll pay the Russians. I'll let them have Nord Stream 2, even though they've been hacking us and ransoming us and taking us on that way. That's no way to run a government. It's bribery. You're buying friends. Hey, let me grab David in Alabama quickly. David, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Well, thank you so much for putting a commercial in between Maria and me. I tell you what, that was an awesome call.
Unbelievable.
And it needs to be replayed to all Democrats worldwide, mm-hmm. or socialists worldwide. Now, I'm calling about the New York Times column, the woman. If you listen to what she says, you hear her typical socialist Democrat diversion, 180-degree diversion from truth, when she starts marching down the line about the Trump people don't want to share their democracy with other folks.
That's right.
It's not that we don't want to share our democracy. We just want to make our democracy the same for everybody. The same democracy that we want to enjoy is what we want you to enjoy with us.
That's right.
But you know, it's the typical thing. They just move right past that. You know, they have this ability to, you know, like I said,
the explicative or the expletive? Yeah.
Expletive. Yeah. You know, explicitly stated. I mean, she absolutely stated, you know, the falsehood about it.
Right.
But I would have one other quick point I'd like to make. You know, we like to say GOAT as, you know, greatest of all time. Talk about President Trump.
Yes, sir.
Well, now sticking with barnyard animals, I have one for the Biden-Harris group. It's called Mule, which is sticking with the Democratic logo. It's the most unqualified liars ever.
Oh, wow. Wow. David in Alabama just coming off the turnbuckle with that one, man.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you. All right. Be well out there. That was very creative. I'm going to give him multiple points for that from the from the judges, the Olympic judges, who understand how to judge commentary. But it's really, it's incredible. They'll tell you, we want to strengthen the democracy, right? They'll tell you, we need the For the People Act to strengthen the democracy. What's one of the main things that they're going to do to strengthen the democracy? Weaken the democracy by getting rid of voter ID. Even though you need a voter, you need an ID to go get a vaccine. If you want to go get a COVID shot, you got to have ID. But they want to say, well, no. Asking for ID to vote, that's weakening the democracy. No, it's not. Stop being silly and not being truthful about the reality of things. I mentioned the Nord Stream 2 pipeline and Putin and the Russians and this ransomware stuff is unbelievable. You know, don't think these reports on cyber attacks and ransomware demands are reserved for just big companies. There are just as many computer hackers planting malware on computers like you own and asking for $500 or $1,000. There's one way to protect your data, and that's to have it always backed up. Rush offers this solution.
You know, when enough of the same things happen, you start calling it a trend, right? One such trend starting to emerge. And I'm surprised by this. I would think by now people would be up to speed on this. Cities and towns, now hospitals, are being frozen out of their computer systems by cyber criminals planting ransomware. I thought this was on the downside. I thought people had found out how to beat this. But the ransomware is back. There's a local community here which ended up agreeing to pay $600,000. I don't think this local community has seen $600,000 since the last bank robbery. But they agreed to pay up because they've been locked out of their computer system. When every last employee is locked out of their computer until a ransom payment's paid, that is a tough set of circumstances. If your computer, you're just as an individual, if your computer data is not backed up, you are just as vulnerable as any of these towns or hospitals. And iDrive provides you with the best data backup service. They make it easy. You download the software, and immediately the data on your computer starts backing up on a safe and secure server that they manage. It's off-site, but it's always online so that you can remotely access your data anytime you're locked out of your data or if your data is lost because of a crash or a theft. I mean, the best way to defeat ransomware is to have a backup. You simply go out and get a new machine. You restore the backup of your data. Bam, you're up and running. Screw the ransomware, guys. All you have to do, imagine what life is like for you if you've lost everything on your computer. And by the way, it happens to everybody. To one degree or another, you'll lose something, you'll lose a file or two, maybe folders, you'll lose the whole thing. It happens to everybody. It's part of having a computer. iDrive.com is the website to sign up at. Download the software from. You save 90% your first year's membership by merely mentioning my name at sign up. That's iDrive, like an iPhone or iPad, iDrive.com. You'll have your own online account only you can access, and you can combine all of your devices into that one account. Now, look here, how many backups you have, you cannot have too many. Now, this is, you back up only certain things or back up everything. Create a bootable backup, which is really, you need a bootable backup no matter how you get it, meaning you can start up a brand new computer after you've restored to it. That's what a bootable backup is. That brings you back to right where you were. iDrive.com. Remember to use my name.
Speaking of cyber attacks and hacking, when we come back, the latest target, Capitol Hill. Cybersecurity is clearly a bipartisan issue. I'm Brett Winterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. And welcome back to the Rush Limbaugh Show. I am Brett Winterbull, your guide host today as we traverse all the big storylines that are out there. This from the ransomware attack world, I guess it's becoming a world now, right? You've got a terrible situation on your hands. Has a tech vendor used by dozens of House offices on Capitol Hill for constituent outreach services has reportedly been hit by a ransomware attack, becoming the latest victim in a series of cyber attacks to target U.S.-based entities. Punchbowl News reported Tuesday that almost 60 House offices from both Republicans and Democrats have not been able to retrieve constituent information from the vendor iConstituent for several weeks. Company is reportedly working with Catherine Spisidor, the chief administrator officer of the House, to resolve the issue, but Punchbowl noted that frustration is mounting as the problems have not yet been fixed. Spisidor said there's no evidence that suggests wider House information technology systems have been breached or compromised, according to Punchbowl. Now, hold on. When I get that kind of a denial, that's when I start kicking off the nervousness. Well, there's no evidence that there's any wider information technology compromise. Sure, there's not. It's just these little teeny tiny sort of hacks that are taking place where they're just pulling out this information. This is crazy. All right. They want to lecture us 24/7, 365 about how we live our lives. They can't secure information inside the Capitol, inside the government. It's unacceptable. I mean, it's patently unacceptable. I mean, the literal analogy is you have one job. You have one job to do, and that job is keeping your stuff secure. You know, you remember Javier Becerra when he was a congressman from California? Do you remember when Javier Becerra was there on Capitol Hill? And he was in charge of the Democrats' efforts when it came to cybersecurity. And he went and he hired the Awan brothers. This is an old story, but he went and hired the Awan brothers. And these were guys from Pakistan who were running an IT business to secure the IT components of the Democratic Party. And there was a fear at the time of the Russian hack and all of that. You can go back and look at this, that the systems had gotten breached at the Capitol. What is it that Rush used to call her? Debbie Blabbermouth Schultz. And of course, the rest of the Democratic caucus had been compromised by hackers who got in, right? The same sort of hacking situation that went in with Hillary's servers and all that sort of stuff. And it followed back to these the Awan brothers, who it turned out were doing a lot of unethical and illegal things when it came to, you know, keeping data and storing stuff and buying equipment and you name it. All that stuff was a huge scandal until it started to get hot and Javier Becerra decided, I'm going to retire from the Congress and I'm going to go out to California and I'm going to be the attorney general. And that's what he did. And that guy that was the California attorney general that was in charge of insecure computer systems there in the Capitol is now the head of the HHS, Health and Human Services. It's a good thing that there's nothing of any value in the HHS systems that could get hacked, you know, like health records, personal information, medical information. It's a good thing that you would never have to find anything that could possibly be violated inside the HHS department, because, I mean, it's not like NASA got hacked and the Office of Personnel Management got hacked. And it's not like, of course, Capitol Hill got hacked. What are the odds that HHS would get hacked? Government wants to tell you how to live your life at every single possible turn and tell you how smart they are. Spizidor says, well, there's no evidence that we've been hacked. Well, there's no evidence you've been hacked, but have you been hacked? What if they hacked you and they didn't leave any evidence? Well, we would probably know that. How would you know it? It would probably show up on the dark web, all of our files. And then we could, what, is the federal government going to start paying ransomware? You know, that's probably what's going to happen. This is a scary, scary, dangerous place that we are all in. I mean, harken back to Rush's ad there for iDrive. You think about it. We got to secure our own stuff. But who's going to secure the government? The minute you raise that issue, you're just going to get yelled at. We have some of the best and brightest what? People in all of... No, you don't. No, you don't. I'm Brett Winterville. I'm your guide host today on the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. And welcome back to the Rush Limbaugh Show, your guide host, Brett Winterville. So we talk about securing our borders, right? We talk about securing our borders. We talk about, you know, all the different sorts of things that are going on out there. You know, there was an imposter supposedly yesterday that crashed the Kamala Harris press conference. Did anybody see this? This imposter who showed up allegedly posing as a Univision reporter. And she showed up and she asked a question. And in fact, as she started to ask her question, she said, you know, hi, my name is so-and-so from Univision. And I just want you to know, I'm so proud of you. I voted for you for the first time, yada, yada, yada. And people are starting to look at this and going, okay, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Even reporters they don't do this. Reporters are not going to say, hi, I'm Jonathan Carl. I voted for you. I'm so happy to be here. Now, this was somebody who was an imposter, somehow let into the room with the vice president of the United States, the second most powerful person in the entirety of the U.S. government, right? She's the heir to the chair if something should happen to Biden. And you get this random person coming in, and they didn't even vet her. They didn't even screen her. What does that tell you? That is a lesson. Yes, I know it's a security failure. Of course, everybody knows it's a security failure. But more than that, you know, the one thing I look at when I see this is if you're doing an event, you've got all these high-level, high-ranking reporters and officials, and now you've got somebody who's come in an unauthorized fashion. That was an undocumented reporter. That was somebody who crashed in through the border there, through the border of security. You can't do that. That's not allowed. I'm wondering if Kamala Harris is going to bring her back and offer her amnesty. Brent Witterbull on the EIB Network. Hour number three underway. Excited to be here with you. And Jane Fonda joining hundreds of protesters, dozens of which were arrested for obstructing construction workers doing their jobs. It's been so long. I guess the COVID probably shut a lot of this down. It's been so long since you saw a good old-fashioned environmental protest, huh? 800-282-2882 is the phone number to be a part of our discussion, of our conversation here as we traverse the big news stories that are out there and the stuff you definitely need to know about. Yeah, so Jane Fonda got together with hundreds of protesters, dozens arrested. They were trying to obstruct construction workers from doing their jobs. See, a Canadian-based company is replacing an aging pipeline that pumps oil underground into the United States. So, of course, Hanoi Jane would go at it again. She and 100 other people were choosing to chain themselves to tractors and to construction equipment to prevent the construction of an underground pipeline in Minnesota. She's doing it because she says that she thinks Biden is easy to push around this way. This is telling. Because you never heard them talk about Trump like this. Here's Jane Fonda.
What we've learned historically is that when a whole lot of people get together and raise a ruckus, it has an effect, especially on a president like Biden and the Army Corps of Engineers. So this is really important. This is really good, and it's not going to end.
Uh-oh, wait a minute. That sounds like an insurrection. That feels insurrectionist. When a whole lot of people get together and raise a ruckus, it has an effect, especially on a president like Biden. Did she just refer to Biden as, you know, a pushover? I think she just basically referred to him as a pushover. That's no good. And the Army Corps of Engineers, they're going to be pushed over by this? I don't know about that. Remember, Fonda has been a great foil over the years for Rush, including back in 2006 when she was trying to start her own women-only talk radio network. Whatever became of that, I wonder? Well, here's Rush.
Jane Fonda was being interviewed by Rita Cosby on PMSNBC about the new women's talk radio network. By the way, we have the stations that network will appear on. They've got four stations, WNAG, WCRY, WFEM, and WPMS. Michelle in Albany, we'll take a quick phone call from you as we get going here today in the EIB network. Hi.
Hi, Rush. I just got to let you know that Hanoi Jane does not speak for me and is just another left-wing kook elite who's out of touch with the mainstream.
I'll tell you what. Did you hear what Jane Fonda said?
No, I just from what you've said.
Well, I've got the audio now. We got two sound bites. You want to listen to them with me?
Absolutely.
And then you can offer cutting-edge analysis
as
a woman, because she's speaking for you here.
Okay.
On all of this. Rita Cosby says, what do you specifically think about Rush Limbaugh?
You've got to be kidding. They make me feel worried about the future for my grandchildren. These are not voices that I want to invite into my brain. I feel like they're toxic to myself, to my soul, and to other people's soul. Life shouldn't be like that. Women want thought-provoking, friendly, trustworthy, funny. They want to laugh, informative talk. Radio, and 75% of them, and we did a lot of research, said they would come back to Women's Talk Radio if they could hear what they want to hear, and we hope to provide it for them. We know what they want. We think we can give it to them.
All right. What do you think of that?
Rush, she's nuts. She's completely insane. I want to talk about real issues, seriously, And the reason I want to do that is to protect my children. You know, this country is just not going to be the same if we continue to appease the terrorists, appease the governments that support them. And I want to do something about it in my little small way with my 4-year-old and my 1-year-old.
That sounds great. Let's now talk about me. No, seriously, she said that we women want thought-provoking. Is this program thought-provoking to you?
It keeps my mind so sharp, I can't even tell you. The fact that I, you know, rarely get out to talk with adults, it's hard for me to do so with little kids. I do it to keep my mind sharp. You just keep me thinking and talking about, you know, real-world issues.
Okay, she said that we women want friendly. This program friendly to you?
It's friendly to me because you want me to live. You want this country to survive. To me, that's friendly.
All right, and trustworthy. You consider this program trustworthy? I mean, when you listen to this program, do you feel you're being told the truth about things, and a host is dealing with you in honesty?
Absolutely. I feel like you look at all the issues. You have good researchers behind you, I'm sure, that give you the news of the day, and you give a thought-provoking, realistic view of the issues.
That's a great answer, except for the fact that I don't have researchers now. Do you think the program's funny? You laugh when you listen to it.
All the time. Very irreverent, very dry sense of humor.
All right, you have just disagreed with everything Madam Fonda has said. And she is speaking for you.
She's out there. She's delusional. I think that the fact that what she did during the Vietnam War completely discredits her, besides the fact that she's a Hollywood elite. They're just out there completely out of touch.
It continues. But Michelle, thank you very much. I appreciate that. You're very kind. It continues to amaze me. Radio is so horrible. It's so mean. It's so rotten. We can't wait to get in it. Radio is so mean-spirited. It's toxic. Radio is, we can't wait to get on the radio. All of these libs are convinced, and I wonder why, that the only way to really change opinion and move public opinion in this country is via the radio today. I wonder why. That anybody have a guess? This program, I, your host, do not look at the audience as men and women. I look at you as Americans, and I look at you as all interested in caring in the future of the country in substantive ways because of your children and your grandchildren and your own lives as well. I have the utmost respect for you people and your intelligence. Otherwise, I wouldn't do the highbrow show that we do here. And never once do I sit down and say, you know, I can't discuss that. The women in the audience won't like it, or the women in the audience won't understand it. I mean, I look, you know, I have adolescent stereotypical male humor at times. I'm a man. I'm a boy. I'm a guy. Yippee. But this audience, you people are treated with the utmost respect in terms of your intelligence and your knowledge. And this program, according to the Pew Research Center, indicates that you are the most knowledgeable audience in all of broadcast media, including television, that deals in news and cultural political issues. And I would be a fool to look at it otherwise. These people don't even know the business that they are getting into, and they don't even know the first thing about success, which is having respect for the audience and trying to connect to it on a daily basis. But they're libs. The reason that they have this attitude is they look out across the country and they see idiocy. I've been trying to tell you for 18 years the way liberals look at people. They look at average people as helpless, dependent. They want them that way. That's how they derive their power. And when middle-class people show they don't need liberals, well, guess who their biggest enemies become? Liberals. So here comes Ms. Fonda and her cohorts trying to set up this network based on wrong assumptions, lack of understanding of how the business operates, and not even correct research on why talk radio is successful. Besides this, these are the people that say, we should all get along. We have too much arguing in this country, too much partisanship. And what are they doing? They're only going after women. They don't care about you men, and I know you wouldn't listen to it anyway, so they're smart in that regard, but still, who is it that's being divisive? Does this program say, women, you're not allowed, we're going to do things with this program to offend you so you don't listen because we don't want you here? Does this program do that? No. Are they going to do that?
Well, you know exactly what they're going to do. And it ends up failing every time they try to replicate it and do their own version of this, because what Rush did was something so unique, and that was respect his audience. You know this Brood X cicada thing that you're hearing about around the country, Brood X? Well, it turns out that as the Biden trip over to Europe was getting underway, the White House press charter plane scheduled to leave Washington on Tuesday evening ahead of Joe Biden's first trip as president was delayed by cicadas, those noisy insects that have emerged after their nearly two decades of slumber. The chartered plane was scheduled to depart about 9 p.m., but a new plane had to be dispatched to Dulles International Airport after airline officials informed White House travel aides that cicadas had invaded exterior sections of the plane late Tuesday afternoon. The flight left early Wednesday morning, more than 6.5 hours behind schedule. In fact, if you looked at the president getting ready to get up and get on that plane, he had to swat away a cicada. So that Brood X is pretty powerful stuff. Speaking of the environment, right? That's an incredible thing. I mean, these cicadas are holding people, they're holding up international diplomacy, and they're upsetting people. It's a terrible, terrible thing. We got to keep an eye. We got to monitor those cicadas for an insurrection. It's absolutely incredible. You know, the secret's out. It's not good news for the big three cell phone carriers. People are abandoning their overpriced wireless carriers and signing up with Pure Talk for the same coverage, but at a fraction of the price. If you're with Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, switching to Pure Talk could save your family over $800 a year. Switching is as easy as switching out your SIM card. You can keep your number, keep your phone, or get huge discounts on the latest iPhones and Androids. There's a reason why Rush trusted Pure Talk, and there is a reason tens of thousands of listeners here on the EIB have made the switch. Pure Talk delivers unparalleled customer service with every one of their reps based right here in the U.S. Get unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. And if you go over on data, they don't charge you for it. From your cell phone, dial #250 and say Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250. Say Pure Talk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk. I'm Brett Winterbull, the guide host today on the EIB Network. And it is the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. I'm Brett Winterbull, and I'm thrilled to be here today. You know, here's something that's really, 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 really quite incredible. This radio program created opportunities for so many talented personalities, including Sean Hannity. He is among the alum of guest hosts of the Rush Limbaugh Show before going on to have his own wildly successful radio program. Sean is this week's guest with Bo Snerdly on the podcast series, Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone. The story he shares in this latest episode is behind-the-scene events around Rush receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom last February. It's one that you don't want to miss hearing firsthand from Sean. Here's just a sample of Sean and James Golden talking about Rush.
Did I ever think I'd be success? No, absolutely not. All I knew, James Golden, is that the first time I was a kid and I listened to radio. And my parents, they weren't coming in my room that my and telling me to turn off the TV. My parents would come in the room, turn that radio off. And in the early days of talk radio, sometimes I'd be listening to baseball games because I was a sports nut as a kid. But then I heard the great pioneers of the world and all different people, all different perspectives, all different points of view, all different styles. And Rush was the one, though, that took it to this whole other level. And the path was so wide that he forged, it created opportunities for all of us.
He's 100% right. Listen to the entire episode wherever you listen to podcasts, sponsored by Tunnel to Towers Foundation and, of course, MyPillow. John is in Columbus, Ohio. Next up, John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for having me. Thank you for filling in.
Thank you, sir.
I had, based on a couple of Rush's teachings, had a theory I would like to posit about why Kamala Harris was the border czar, made
sure.
The border czar. I first was taken aback that this happened. That why would they do this? She's a prominent person and whatnot. And, of course, Rush told us nothing like this happens by accident. You need to think of the real reason.
Yes.
And it occurred to me something else that Rush had said about the people pulling the strings behind the scenes of Biden, that wanted, you know, the billionaire class in the shadows, the Apple widow and LinkedIn, you know, various people, no one knows who they are, but and Rush had said if they think that Kamala is going to stand by and play second fiddle while this happens, they've got another thing coming. and it occurred to me that they gave her this fool's errand, sent her on this fool's errand. So they have a mechanism of which to remove her if they would need leverage, as it were. So anytime if she does, you know, if she doesn't play the way that they want her to, that a tragic story, and if she would try to play the grace card on them or whatever maneuvering she would do, that a tragic story of a migrant child at Kamala's border could come out.
I
wanted to get your take on that. Just it seemed surprising that this. I'd like to hear what you think.
Sure. No, I get it, John, and I appreciate the call. I don't think it's implausible to think that way at all. Politics is warfare by other means, and internal politics is some of the most vicious politics there is. So I'm going to follow your theory here and say, okay, he's purposely setting a little bit of a trap in the road for her to handle the border mess, which there's almost no upside, because she either has to come out publicly and say we have to reinstate the Trump order, which she can't. She'll undercut her own credibility with progressives, and he won't do it. Or she has to do some other sort of thing to fix it. But he also tasked her with something else, and this has been forgotten, and it's only been about a week. He tasked her with getting this For the People voting bill pushed through. He tasked her with that voting bill, that 800-page bill that Manchin says he will not vote for. He's made her the boss on that, and that is an incredibly risky thing, because Kamala Harris is not known as somebody who is a builder of bridges across the aisle. This is not looking at a senator from Maine or Romney or Murkowski or Manchin, or even in the spirit of the old Joe Biden back before he was vice president. And I'm not endorsing Biden, but I'm just saying, you know, he was known as a guy who was trying to do wheels and deals. Kamala Harris doesn't have, I don't think she's got any substantial legislation attached to her name from her time in the Senate, in the United States Senate. And so how does she build goodwill to pass this Voting Rights Act thing? How does she get this border under control? I don't know. And there's only one other possibility that kind of hangs in the back of my mind, and it goes back to that report in that book 2 weeks ago that said that Jill Biden was absolutely furious with Kamala Harris's attack on Joe Biden at that June 27th, 2019 debate. It was Biden's very first debate. And she says to him that you opposed busing, and I was that little girl that was going to be denied an education to grow up to be a senator. And Jill Biden, according to the books, you know, the writing in the book, is fit to be tied as a result of that, saying, how dare you call my husband a racist like that up on the stage to try to kneecap him? And then he ends up picking her as vice president. So is it possible that Jill Biden has influenced President Biden to send the vice president on these two tasks, and that in the vice president's mind, these two tasks are going to be, you know, big time wins that she can use to advance her own agenda, when they're really sort of like traps? I don't put anything past that in terms of Washington, D.C., because it is an absolute thicket of treachery. I don't put anything past that. Caleb in Quincy, Illinois. Welcome to the program, Caleb. What's on your mind?
I've been listening to Rush since I was 13 years old, and he had such an impact on my life that I named my first child Rush Andrew Jansen after him. And awesome. I've, you know, since his passing, I've had this, you know, hole in my heart since he's left. And I've been listening to the podcast that James has been putting on,
Mm-hmm. And it's therapy, man. It's I feel like it's taken that hole, and it shrinks it every day I listen to that show.
That is awesome. Caleb, that is so great, man. And I'm so happy that that's the way it's being received by you, because I know that is the way it is intended by James and the entire team working on this, because we all felt love and affection for Rush and connection to Rush. You testify to that by naming your son the way you did. And it's important to remember Rush lives on, because we're still able to get his wisdom and his insight and to find out more and more about him, especially those of us who were close to him from the people who were closest to him. It's an amazing journey, and I'm so happy it has filled that space for you. And I'm hoping that at some point you get to expose your son to it as well. It is a great namesake to have. I am Brett Witterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. You know, as a parent of a couple of kids, and I know millions and millions of people in this audience have children as well, there's almost nothing you wouldn't do when a child feels sick to make them feel a little bit better. Welcome back to the Rush Limbaugh Show. I am Brett Witterbull. A new study finds that storytelling really does make sick children feel better. That's according to researchers in Brazil. Reading to hospitalized kids reduces pain and stress by fueling certain hormones in the brain. From the research that they did, they noted that during storytelling, something happens that we call the transport of narrative. That is, the child through fantasy can experience sensations and thoughts that transport them momentarily to another world, to another place. Now, different from the hospital room and therefore away from the aversive conditions of hospitalization, says the study first author, Dr. Guillaume Brockington from the Instituto d'Or de Pesquisa e Ensino, IDOR, and Federal University of ABC in a media release. So you have a child that's sick, that's not feeling well. You read them a story, you tell them a story, and it transports them away to that other place so that they're not feeling the pain. They're not focusing on the pain. Well, nobody, and I mean no one, knew how to master the transport of narrative and storytelling quite like Rush. And his Rush Revere series was proof positive of that. Let's take you back to the release of his first book, Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims, and the reaction of his young readers.
Here's Cameron in Ledyard, Connecticut. Great to have you.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello.
It's a 10-year-old. I just saw that. Hi, Cameron. How are you?
Good.
Well, I'm glad that you called. It's great to have you on the program.
Great to be talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. What's on your mind? What did you want to talk about?
I wanted to talk about the Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims.
You've read that?
Yep.
Did you like it?
Like it? I loved it.
Ah, Cameron, I love you. What a great answer. Like it? I loved it. That's great, Cameron. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Who's your favorite character? What was your favorite part?
Well, Rush was my favorite character. And my favorite part, really, the boat. They were on the boat with, like, all of them that were on.
Yeah, the Mayflower. So you like Rush Revere. He'll be happy to hear that because he's getting a little jealous of all the fan mail that Liberty is getting.
Well, I also think you should, like, make one about the Revolutionary War.
Oh, you want me to write another book about the Revolutionary War? Well, okay, that's not a bad idea. I'll take your suggestion, and I'll think very hard about it. Because if you'd like to read about it, I think it'd be well worth your while. What interests you about the American Revolutionary War that you want to know more about?
Well, mainly the true, like, main stories about all the backgrounds on everyone in it.
So you want to know about the people that made it happen?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can probably do that at some point. Folks, I have to tell you something here. If you would have told me 5 years ago that 10-year-olds would have been calling here and asking me to write, I would have asked you, what do you know that I don't? But this is the most amazing thing this is the target group, age 10 to 13. Actually, the book is written for everybody, for parents and grandparents to read to the kids or to read with them. But it's written for the 10 to 13 age group. And it is designed to counter what's being taught throughout the public school system about the history of the founding of this country. It's an effort to get the truth to people who are maybe not being taught it, not the way you and I were taught it, and get calls from people like Cameron, 10-year-old kids like Cameron, who are enjoying it. That's a big deal. I can't tell you how much it makes me happy. Just a thrill it is. So, Cameron, I really thank you for your call.
What's really incredible about that call is that call's from 2014. So Cameron's 10 years old in 2014, just doing rough math here. Means that Cameron is about 16 or 17, depending on how you factor the age, now in 2021. And remember the piece we played about Rush talking about the study done where people who are exposed to the American flag will likely become conservatives or vote Republican, or what the conclusions were in that regard. What about exposing our kids at a young age to the history of our country, to the heroism that's found within the history of our country? There's a reason why the CRT thing is rolling out there the way it is. There's a reason why that we are being counter-programmed. Now, Cameron was 10 when he read that book, and he loved that book, and he had a pretty good grip on what he liked about that book. And he went on to say, I'd like to hear about the American Revolution. That's hunger for knowledge. So I would wonder, Cameron today, who would be, you know, a junior or a senior in high school, what that foundation was like. Did that cause him to read more of the Rush Revere books? Did that cause him to take a deeper dive into history? I love history. I've always loved history my entire life. I loved reading history books when I was a kid, and it was something that I got turned on to very, very early on. And it's the sort of thing that sticks with you. And I think that was a big reason why, you know, I went off to a pinko commie leftist college. I had a great time, but none of that rubbed off on me. Lived out in California for years. I didn't have any of that commie socialism stuff rubbing off on me. I think it's because you have that grounding there, and you think about Cameron, and you say, okay, well, so Cameron is going to be going off to college. Now, assuming Cameron's still sort of the same guy, liked history, studied American history, loves the country, will he be immune to the craziness that he's going to hear from college professors telling him that the country is wrong and rotten and terrible? I guess what I'm saying is there's a way to inoculate your kids so that no matter what the professors say, no matter what the pressure groups say, the marching protest people say, your kid is still going to understand the miracle that is America. It's up to us to expose them to it early on, to say to them, look, this is the miracle of America. The miracle of America isn't just that we were an idea. We're not built around an ethnic identity, a color identity. And America was an idea, freedom and liberty, the right to determine your future. All of that incredibly vital. But the miracle of America is the founders, as vilified as they have been, and they have been vilified for a solid 2 years, a solid 4 years in earnest by the left. They left for us an ability to amend our Constitution, to say, listen, something's going to come up at some point. We don't know what it is, but if you want to change this, or you want to enfranchise some group, or you want to make something better, this is a mechanism by which you can do that. It hasn't always been for the good. I mean, it hasn't always been for the positive. And we could debate, based on your ideology, what was good and what wasn't good. But the fact is, they left us a roadmap so that we didn't have to have a violent revolution and scrap the idea of America. We can continue to grow and not be held measured by past actions, which is exactly the counter narrative to CRT, critical race theory. And I think about Cameron as a 17-year-old getting ready to go to college and thinking about what he's going to get bombarded with. And Rush may have given him a little exposure to the thing that makes America great and that makes America special and that makes America a miracle that may keep him afloat. And all the other Camerons that are out there in this country in that very special generation. Plenty more straight ahead. We'll have our EIB high note. I'm Brett Witterble, your guide host today on the EIB Network. It is the Rush Limbaugh Show, EIB Network. Great to be here with you. In the previous segment, Rush spoke about, well, the Rush book that he wrote for the kids. Come on, you heard what I was talking about, right? He spoke with a young caller about his first book in the series of five, Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims. Today's EIB high note is a nod to his fourth book in the series, Rush Revere and the Star-Spangled Banner, which features a storyline about one of the characters, Cam, dealing with his father being deployed overseas. Now, anyone from a military family knows there's nothing quite like being reunited with a loved one after an extended period apart. Now, for a pair of six-year-olds in Tampa, Florida, they got the best surprise when that happened unexpectedly outside their elementary school. Ebony Bailey is a technical sergeant in the United States Air Force. She's been serving in Kosovo for the last 6 months. The deployment's been hard on her son and her baby brother. The school counselor, Melissa Jones, helped to arrange to have the boys outside the school with cameras rolling, thinking that they were being interviewed. They had no idea their mom and older sister was about to surprise them. Here's how that sounded.
I just can't wait to see the excitement on their faces, especially Joel's, because he's missed his mom the last 6 months that she's been away.
Now, this is one of those stories where radio just can't do it justice. It's rare when that happens. But you can see the big reveal and the boys' reactions over at rushlimbaugh.com. So go to rushlimbaugh.com. You can see their reactions. It is absolutely, totally priceless. And you're going to love it. What a high note that we've got for you today. Let's grab another phone call very quickly. Eric is in Daytona, Florida. Eric, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Brent. How you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Good, good. A couple calls back, you had an impassioned Latino woman named Maria giving a great example of how little the Democrats care for the children and how they're basically being used. Mm-hmm. Need I remind the people who are listening that the Democratic Party are also the same party who kill millions of children a year through abortion or murder. So Maria's right. The Democrats could give two hoots about children. Real quick on one other topic, kind of the fleecing of America. We've got the Democrats and Republicans who are basically like the Gambino family in Washington. They're out to fleece America for all they can while they're in office, and it doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrat. What we've got right now is Joe Biden fleecing America, telling we're going to spend $6 trillion. And ask yourself where all that money goes.
Right.
Obama paid Iran billions of dollars. Is it too out of the realm of possibility to say maybe he got a little kickback off the top of that, and maybe Biden will too when he gets a little kickback from Putin for allowing the Nord Stream pipeline to go through?
Well, here's
just ridiculous what's going on.
I understand what you're saying, Eric. Here's what I would say about this Nord Stream pipeline. I think what Joe Biden is doing is he's trying to go all in on this Iranian nuclear deal part two. And I think what he's doing, because it's not just Nord Stream 2, it was essentially saying that he didn't think that Putin was part of the hacking of the Colonial Pipeline, that there may have been hackers in Russia, but Putin didn't have anything to do with that. And you and I both know that's likely poppycock. So what is he doing? He's trying to create the conditions by which he's got maximum international support for this Iranian nuclear deal. And who is the biggest sponsor for the Iranians? Out there strategically, it'd be the Russians. It'd be Vladimir Putin. Who else is Joe Biden not speaking ill of? Xi Jinping. Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party entered into an extensive, I think it's 20 years, $400 billion weapons deal with the Iranians. So this is not going to be a time in which America stands strong across the world trying to challenge the bad guys. This is going to be about caving at every possible turn so that Joe can maybe have a shot finally at a Nobel Prize for doing an Iranian nuclear deal that we both know is 100% hollow. Christopher in Marlboro, Vermont. Welcome to the Rush Limbaugh Show, Christopher.
You know, thank you. Thank you, Brett. I'm a longtime listener. I became a Ditto Head in 1990 on my way home.
Yes, sir.
From a fundraiser for then Governor Jim Flim Flam, as Bob Grant used to call him, Florio. I was on my way home on Route 17, heading up to Great Barrington, Mass., and I heard this voice on the radio. I couldn't find any music I liked because I'm a musician. And I heard this voice, and I thought, my God, this guy thinks the sun shines out of his something. I kept listening, and unlike what Rush used to say, it took 2 weeks. No, I tuned in the next day. I told my wife, God rest her soul, I told my wife, I just listened to this guy, and I don't agree with him. He agrees with me.
Ha 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 ha! Yes, yes.
But as far as is this thing with Kamala.
Yes, sir.
I remember Willie Brown last year. He was saying that he didn't recommend for her to accept the nomination for vice president. And Willie Brown, I mean, I grew up in California. Willie Brown was, he was it, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Speaker of the House in Sacramento and
yes, sir.
Later Governor of San Francisco and what have you. But he was very much against her accepting the nomination. And I don't think it was because he feared for her future. I think he was demonstrating some patriotism.
Look, it's entirely possible. She is an interesting political character, political figure that's out there. But the question is, what are the bona fides? What are the things that she's going to produce that are going to make America stronger, safer, and more prosperous? I don't know. I haven't seen it evidenced yet. And she has just come off of a very bad mission to Central America on immigration. Plenty more straight ahead. I'm Brett Winterble on the Rush Limbaugh Show. It is the Rush Limbaugh Show. I'm Brett Winterble. This is final segment of the show. I am the guide host, and it's been a pleasure being with you, and it's been a pleasure being with everybody here today. I'm looking back at Mara Gay and her commentary about explication. Oh, here's the thing. I'd like to explicate in one regard, and that is to say that conservatism makes the most sense. Why? Because we trust the individual. You've heard that from Rush a million times over. That's why that last caller, Christopher, was so spot on when he said, this guy's agreeing with me. Most of America agreed with Rush Limbaugh. They just didn't really know it until they realized that freedom is an individual right and choice. Choose to be free and unoffended. It's going to do it for us. I'm Brett Winterble. This is the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network.